Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for the stage. How's everyone today? It's about to go dark a little bit. Thank you very much for the stage. My name is Muhammad Noor. I'm a Rohingya myself from neighboring country, Burma, Myanmar, as a Rohingya. Today, I would like to talk two aspects of identity. Of course, one part, which being how a technology can help a marginalized community and how that can be as a model for the rest of the world. So moving forward, we started this project called the Rohingya Project. Moving forward. So before we go into the project, I would like to differentiate between two aspects of a lot of people talk about. Number one is a refugee, a person that migrated from their own country for multiple reasons, religious persecution, political persecution, and many of those things. And stateless is a person that is not recognized by the state or some sort of fall into the crack of any system that does not have any sort of identity. So according to the UN, this is not exact, but there's about 120 million refugees across the globe, and that is also increasing. And about 20 million stateless that include in many parts of the world. And unfortunately, we happen to be one large portion of those stateless people. Moving forward, what is the Rohingya and who are these people? Rohingya are the indigenous ethnic minority of Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, mainly residing in Arakan state, which is a Rakhine state. The Rohingya people have endured over four decades of statelessness, displaced, and genocide in homeland, and many of these victims, which has been recognized by the international community in many of the international jurisdictions, call as genocide, ICC and ICJ, some of you might know. And the stateless has left, there are about 3 million people now, people living in diaspora, that consists of Bangladesh, and which I will follow. So these 3 million people, over 3 million people have no documentation, have no birth certificate, have no passport, and so that they so have no access to any kind of things. Moving forward, so this is a kind of a rough map where the Rohingya are located across the world. So this is like about 300,000 plus in Saudi Arabia, in UAE, in Pakistan, in India, and Bangladesh is one of the largest, which is 1.3, it could be 1.4. And Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, and many other countries, regardless of Australia, Japan, and Europe, and US, and so on and so forth. Moving forward, just to give you a glimpse how the refugee are living, this is an aerial shot of Bangladesh refugee camp. It's extremely harsh condition. There's no sanitation, no food, and there's many NGOs trying to help, and there's no infrastructure. Just to give you closer limbs, this is how it looked like. It's all makeshift camps. Every time there is a burning, fire, and many of those issues. To go quickly, so those are the harsh condition of the Rohingya people. So because of the statelessness, we are trying to identify a few things. So because of the, so they don't have basic rights and basic access to any of this, which is, no Rohingya can go to any university, education, or even simple school. Social, any kind of social functions or financial is something really, really big. No Rohingya can even receive money from something like a Western Union. Forget about opening up a bank account. And of course, identity is a major issue. Quickly moving forward. So we started this project called the Rohingya Project. The Rohingya Project is a grassroots initiative dedicated to preserve and promote Rohingya identity through a decentralized identity using blockchain, enable access to learning and skill building, and unlock some sort of opportunity. So the way we are going forward is, of course, one of our vision is because being Rohingya has been marginalized in many different parts of the world, so it is our vision to how do we restore Rohingya identity and dignity as well. The four components in the Rohingya Project. Component number one is a decentralized identity. So this can be an unlocking for rest of this. And second is education and skill. We have built a number of it as well, which I will show you. And a community exchange where we use multiple token technology to incentivize community people. And then we have a heritage archive that actually preserve our identity and heritage and all sorts of things. And moving forward, so this is a quick glimpse of what we do in heritage archive, or visuals, and community exchange, P2P transaction, aid distribution is another one. So in the decentralized identity, we are using something called community-based verification, since we don't have any central institute. And we are one of the largest centralized institute. Moving forward, this is what we are targeting in terms of sustainable development goal. So my time is up, so I'm just quickly gonna show what our roadmaps are. We started in 2018, so we did multiple collaboration. One of them is University of Washington. We did a pilot in 2019. And then we have did an educational pilot, historical archive as well. And this year we have launched the Art Academy. So this is what basically we won. And this is where we have finished it. This is what we're going to build now in the future, some sort of infrastructure development and MPV and so on, and looking for community engagement and looking for partnership. That's all for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mohammed.
I took one extra half a second.
We have time for questions, but if you guys don't mind, I want to ask a question myself first. Can you share a little bit more about the community-based verification system?
Right. Since we do not have any central authority, and neither we have any kind of a passport or anything that can they can rely on, so it's based on, for example, if I say I am from this particular place, in Rakhine State, I'm a Rohingya, and those local villagers will verify me saying that, yes, I know his family, I know him through the language, through the and stuff like that. So we have a very strong community-based verification that we are placed to verify.
How many people verify you for you to become a part of the...
It could be from simple, from 2 to 3 people that knows you can be verified.
Thanks for sharing that. Any more questions from the audience? We have one to... Okay. Please catch. Nice.
Okay. How do you handle the challenge of having mobile devices or internet access for this? Or do you have a failover system that doesn't require any kind of mobile device or internet access?
Right. So since our, as I have shown you the map, our diaspora is across different parts. So those who live in Thailand and Malaysia, they are fairly in a good infrastructure, have some sort of a good access to the phone. But those who are in Bangladesh camp, they might not have a good access to the phone and internet. So we are trying to build a QR code offline so that they can use with minimum charges. And we have a lot of offline facilities that we're providing so it can be assisted. And we are trying to deal with the very marginalized and illiterate community. So we have to do a lot of a lot of spoon feeding and handling on the ground. Hope that answers your question.
Hey, thanks for your presentation. I have a couple questions. First question is, I'm curious where you are getting the funding to do this project. Second question is your goal with this decentralized identity, is it to get countries, like normal countries, to recognize this identity?
Right, thank you very much. So the way we are now funding ourselves is through a community funding, which is really like a bootstrapping. We did a couple of crowdfunding. We haven't got any dedicated or organizational funding, which we are looking into it. That is one. And the second one, what was the second question just now you mentioned?
I think it's whether you want to be recognized by other nations.
By the authorities? Right. So Rohingya decentralized identity meant to be a secondary identity or a kind of community identity rather than a legal identity. So in any state, you have a legal identity like passport and ID. Then you have license ID to have specific services. This is meant to be a community identity to access some educational and financial services. But that is a bigger goal in the future where we would lobby once we have enough number to recognize and moving forward on that. Yeah, so that's part of the plan, yes.
Got it. One last question, short one.
Yeah, you mentioned about community-based verification, but right. The number of persons, 3 or 4, it's too small, actually, I think. So is there any mechanism for, like, if you want to abuse this mechanism, you can, like, like say I'm this person, even though I'm not this person. Right. But is there any mechanism for avoiding
this?
Yes,
there are. So the way this happens is that when you put an application, the first thing you do is you record yourself 1 minute Rohingya language video. So you say, I'm from here, blah, blah, blah. And the community verifiers will look into it. If they are not satisfied, they will have a one-to-one online call to make sure you are talking, you have the language. So we have 5 major tests. Cultural test, language test. This is the only thing we can rely on since we don't have documentation. So really, geographical knowledge of the place and so on and so forth. So it is extremely hard for any non-Rohingya to penetrate, but it's extremely easy for any Rohingya to get registered.
Thank you. That's it for our question time. Please reach out to Mohammed if you have any more questions about it. It's a very interesting project and fascinating sharing. Thank you. Let's give Mohammed another round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mohammed. So the next person.